SF Signal, episode 85, interview with Jennifer Brozek. This is the SF Signal Podcast, as powered by the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And this is the interview show for the week. Tonight, I have I met a lot of people when I went to Worldcon. And one of the folks I met was sitting at the Apex table. And we just got to chatting, and we had a lot of mutual friends. And I was buying a couple of books, including one of hers, that she had edited, an anthology. And, you know, I said, gosh, it'd be so nice to have you come on the podcast. And she agreed and thought that that'd be something fun to do. And for this episode, she came on and we had a nice little Skype conversation, which I'm going to play for you now. So without any further ado, here is my interview with Jennifer Brozek. Tonight, I have with me an author and editor who has worked on a lot of anthologies and has a lot of fiction out there, Jennifer Brozek. Is that correct?
Yes, Brozek is correct.
See, I completely forgot to ask you how to pronounce your name before I started this whole thing.
Don't worry about it. You were one of the few people who did not mangle it and throw an A in there. Let me tell you, Prozac coming out really kind of screwed my family.
Oh, my gosh.
But it's okay, Brozek. Nice. Yep.
Now, we met for the first time, and I want to throw this out there for people who are listening. We're actually doing the video chat, and this is the third video chat I've ever done. Brent Weeks wanted to do video, and there was somebody else who wanted to do video, and I can't remember who the second one was, but Brent wanted to do it because he's like, I have all these really cool hand gestures. And I'm like, okay. And so we can see each other, and we met when I bought this anthology, Close Encounters of the Urban Kind, at Worldcon. I walked up to the Apex booth, and you were working the booth.
I was.
And I liked that you had you guys were rocking the iPad with the little credit card scanner.
Of course, that's Square, and I'm actually one of the featured PR, marketing PR people. If you do square.com/authors, that's me.
Oh, that's cool.
It's this whole thing about how authors get paid.
That's very cool. So we chatted for a little bit, and I looked around, and there was a couple of books there. I actually ended up buying Close Encounters of the Urban Kind, which you edited. And I also bought the one from Mary Adkins.
Harlan County Horrors.
Yes, and half the reason I bought that was because of the show Justified, which takes place in Harlan County.
I don't actually watch that show, so I didn't know that.
Harlan County, Kentucky. Yes.
Yes.
So that's the other reason, and also because Mari is a friend on Twitter. And then you and I got to chatting, and I said, oh my gosh, you know, I've got to get Jennifer on the podcast and talk a little bit. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Okay, well, I'm a full-time freelance editor and author, which means I get to choose which 70 hours of the week I work. I write role-playing games and have won 2 awards for them. I have 5 anthologies coming out this year. 4 are already out, and the last one from DAW called Human for a Day comes out in December. My first anthology I won an award for at Best Editing. And I write fiction, primarily urban horror, urban fantasy and horror. I'd like to become, on the author's side, I'd like to be Stephen King and Neil Gaiman's Unholy Love Child. On the editing side, I want to be Ellen Datlow and John Joseph Adams' Unholy Love Child. So I do a lot of work.
Christy Yant might have something to say about that.
Oh, no. No biology involved. We had that discussion. Unholy is in there.
Ah, gotcha. So you brought up a couple of questions in my head there. So you've got 5 anthologies out this year. What are they?
Okay. So I have 2 from Dark Quest Books. The first is called Beauty Has Her Way. It is not a heroine's book. It is a book about pragmatic, beautiful women getting the job done using all of their assets. Mm. Then I have Human Tales, which is what kind of tales would the monster tell their children about those horrible humans who, you know, murder them and break oaths and such like that.
Have you seen The Goblin Core from Ari Marmel?
I have seen it. I have not read it.
Okay. He explains it. It's the Lord of the Rings from the side of the orcs.
Right. And eventually that is on my to-do read list, mm-hmm. but it's, I actually have like a whole bookshelf of things that I am to read at some point.
Wow. That's unheard of. I've never heard of anyone ever anywhere who has a bookshelf of.
You mean the one I saw on your webcam? See, this is why I wanted the webcam so I could actually talk to you and see you pointing. Let's see. The third one is by Graveside Tales, and it's called Beast Within Two. It is stories of unusual shapeshifters, like were pelicans, were ferrets. And there's two werewolf stories, but they're an unusual location. It's steampunk Victorian England versus Nazis. Actually, the werewolves were the Nazis. And a post-apocalyptic one. And the fourth one that is out is by Flying Pen Press. It is called Space Tramps. It is number 5 in the Full Throttle Space Tales series. Now, unlike what most people ask me, Space Tramps isn't about space horrors. That would be the Space Sirens, which is number 3. Space Tramps is about the lost people of a spacefaring society, the hobo,
sure.
the stowaway, the orphan, the nomad, the gypsy, and what happens to them. And of course, the fifth one, which is one of my favorite right now, the doll one, Human for a Day, which is about creatures by wish, will, curse, or want become from non-human to human for one full cycle, you know, sunrise to sunrise. Hmm. And there's some really big tearjerkers in that one.
You know, they all sound wonderful. And I do have to admit that when you said were penguin.
No, I'm sorry. I meant were pelican.
Oh,
sorry.
Pelican. Well, either way, I'm flashing to Opus from Boone County for some reason. I don't know why.
No. That one, Lydia, I think she's Little Fluffy Cat on Twitter. And she wrote this story about a were pelican in New Orleans during the Katrina time, the Katrina oil spill. And it was just so amazingly poignant.
Sure. How do you manage to put out 5 anthologies in 1 year?
You work really hard and you don't sleep a lot. The other thing is you have them scheduled. In the process of putting together an anthology, once you get the stories that you are accepting, mm-hmm. it takes about 3 months. So if you schedule them well, you're only having 1 or 2 come out every other month. So between editing that, having editorial interns and proofers to help me to make sure that I don't miss any mistakes.
Sure.
Or if I do, they catch it and then everybody thinks I'm brilliant.
And then do you have slush readers who just kind of go through all the stories?
No. When it comes to anthologies, I usually do invitation only. So, so for the small press anthologies, that's no more than 50 stories. For the large press, it's a completely different world and a much stricter kind of invitation set.
You know, I talked to a lot of people, and I've had a couple of editors who are with the larger publishing companies. You know, they say that the anthology is dead, and that, you know, they're just not making any money off of them. But when you go to something like a Worldcon or a World Fantasy, you see that the small presses are pushing out a lot of anthologies, and there's a lot of different kinds of themes, a lot of different kinds of stories. It almost feels like that's where the anthology has gone to live.
I would say for the most part, that's correct. Small press anthologies are allowed to take chances. Mm-hmm. They're allowed to delve into topics not normally seen. You and I briefly talked about two anthologies before we start the recording here. And I mean, what major press do you know that would do erotica, zombie erotica, or Lovecraftian erotica anthologies?
And of course, we're talking about Rigor Immortis from Absolute Express. And Cthulhu Erotica from Dagon Books. And my Cthulhu Erotica has a couple of signatures in it. I've got Kerry Quinn and Don P. Have signed this one. I don't have signatures in Rigor Immortis, but I do have in another one that Absolute Express did, which is the Broken Time Blues. Now, you know, you managed to push out five anthologies. You also write, and when we talk about Cthulhu Erotica and Rigor Immortis, you had an essay in Cthulhu Erotica, and you actually had a short story, I believe, in Rigor Immortis.
That is correct. Kerry and I talked briefly about, which she and I were discussing, who would be good for Cthulhu Erotica. And part of that was from the nonfiction point of view. And she asked me about a couple of people, two of which, you know, Kenneth Haidt, I highly recommended to her. Mm-hmm. And then Cody Goodfellow, who I actually met a couple of years ago at NorwestCon, each other in the dealer's room. And that's how I ended up knowing about him and recommending him. She said something about that, and I said, well, I'll write you an article, an essay. And when I pitched her, you know, the sexual attraction of the Lovecraft universe, I think she was surprised and titillated, as you might say.
Sure. Who wouldn't be?
So, and that essay has gotten some very interesting reviews. A couple people have panned it as not very in-depth, and a couple people have lauded it as, you know, very well thought out. And it means I've done something right. People both love and hate it.
Sure.
So.
And what did you do for Rigor Immortis?
Okay. So.
now, were you involved in the whole, let's see how badly we can scar Jame and Erica movement that was going on amongst a lot of the writers?
I was watching it, and see, Erica Holt was one of my editorial interns. Mm. And she and Jame had this whole scar thing going on right around the time that she was working with me. And of course, I had to support her because Erica and Jame are amazing editors, and they're very, very good at what they do. Honestly, I don't know if I would have wanted to edit the zombie erotica, because frankly, I don't like zombies. But every time somebody pays me money to write a story, I do sell it. My particular story is actually more traditional, the Voden zombie, and it's in the revenge section because that's just kind of what came to mind, and it's a very visceral, dirty little piece.
You know, John Anilio wrote a song for that and debuted it at World Fantasy last year. He co-wrote a song, and he's planning on releasing a recorded version of it this month. And so it's kind of good that I have someone on to talk a little bit about Rigor Immortis with, because I know a lot of the authors really pushed for that book and really help sell it. And that's another thing about the small press that has impressed me over the last couple of years, as I've gotten to know more people in, you know, who work with small presses, who run small presses, and who put out these anthologies, is the way that the authors just, you know, they love the anthology and they really go out there and push it, you know, and they're willing to do signings, they're willing to do readings, they'll do whatever it takes to help get that anthology out into the world where people can see it, you know, and more people can read it. And that kind of camaraderie and just, you know, coming together to push that book out, that really surprised and impressed me. I've seen it a lot of times now.
Well, the saying is that the publishing industry is an incestuous small group, and it's true. And that goes double for small press anthologies. Because frankly, without the help of the authors, the book will not succeed. Also, again, because small press anthologies can go out on a ledge, you know, they can take a stand that large presses cannot. They can express their opinion or go after a particular style of writing, erotica or not, and that makes the authors and the editor really passionate about the product, because in a way, the editor has a vision, but it's the authors who make that vision come true. And through that, they change it. They make it more than the sum of its parts. Mm-hmm. And because of that, you know, anthologies are fun, especially when you can have more than one person at a reading and get it signed. And I really enjoy doing them. I'm looking forward to doing more anthologies. I've got some stuff hopefully in the works here soon. But it is a tough market. And I think that's why small press and the ebook market, the electronic book market, is so much more prevalent. But I think there's a lot of bias to overcome. Sure. Some people think small press or ebook and immediately think crap.
And that's not true. I mean, you know, no. And for a lot of people, you know, they're saying basically that the ebook market is breathing life into the short fiction market.
Yes.
Because it's giving, you know, people an opportunity to push out not only short stories, but novellas.
Novellas, for sure. That's a very hard length to sell. Mm-hmm. But it also does things like John Scalzi just recently released a novella and a short story individually in the e-format. And in traditional publishing, I would never have been able to pick that up. That wouldn't have, you cannot sell a single story unless it's in a magazine if you want to go hard print. But the e-format, you know, it was very easy for me to go, wait, there's two stories here from the old man's war universe. Let me pick that up. That's mm-hmm. perfect.
Right.
And, you know, I swallowed them whole. You know, I read them both in a single afternoon, and they were wonderful. And then I, you know, forced them on my husband, who likes the same
sure
series. So,
now, was that a Diet Right?
It was. That's what I drink, is Diet Right when it comes to soda.
So where's the moon pie?
That's an East Coast thing.
What's a Southern thing? It's actually, you know, RC Cola and a moon pie.
Well, I happen to like Diet Right, and I didn't have any moon pies.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I just
stairs.
I just thought I'd throw it out there. I had another question that came to mind 20 minutes ago when we started this. You said RP games, and that you've written some RP stuff. And just last week, I got to talk with Ed Greenwood.
A wonderful guy. He's actually my first co-credit on a book.
Oh, really? That's awesome. Yeah, he was a hoot.
I love him.
Why don't you talk a little bit about what you've done? You know, I noticed that White Wolf was in your credits, and I've come to know a lot of authors who wrote some stuff for White Wolf at some point in their career. Mer Lafferty did.
Mer's cool. I like her.
Yeah, Mer's great. We love Mer.
When it comes to writing for White Wolf, I have written one book, and I actually went through the full SAS slush pile, which they have a call for products online on their website. And I pulled that down and I had this idea for monsters based on proverbs and superstitions. So I pitched them the book Proverbial Monsters. And I followed their instructions exactly, because trust me, you really want to.
Right. Yes.
When it comes to submitting things. And Eddie Webb, who is a friend of mine, pulled it out of slush, thought it was awesome, did not even read the fact that my name was on it. He did not know that he had accepted my proposal until I Twittered about it. And then he was like, oh, hey, that is you. So that's me saying, yes, the slush pile can work. Otherwise, I've edited some of the Werewolf the Forgotten. Let's see, what were they called? Something Chronicles. Wait, do I have it on my website? No, I don't, because I'm dumb.
That's okay. Now, while you're looking for that, I also noticed a credit on there under role playing games, and I have to show you my shirt before I mention what it is.
What are you talking about?
I am wearing my Joss Whedon is my master now shirt, which of course means that I'm referencing the Serenity role playing game. What did you do for Serenity?
I worked on the role-playing supplement called The Big Damn Heroes Handbook. That was edited by Cam Banks, who is like one of the main editors for Margaret Weiss Productions. And that is actually a book I won an award on. We won the 2010 Origins Award for Best Role-Playing Supplement. That one was very collaborative. Everybody got to read everybody else's parts. And make comments and sometimes argue with each other. Most of the time we didn't argue with each other. We all are very strongly opinionated. Most authors are. And it came out great. I mean, people ask me, what part did you write? Well, I wrote a bunch of different parts, but the part that I am most proud of is the How to Die Like a Punk section. So that was one of the parts that I wrote of that book, and that was the first book that somebody insisted that they get a picture with me.
Oh wow!
Because I worked on that, and it was the weirdest thing ever.
You know, there were some tweets going back and forth because they said that Amber Benson was going to be on Ringer with Sarah Michelle Gellar, and they said it was epic. It was like that time that Leonard Nimoy was on TJ Hooker.
Oh my God. You know, Amber is, I've never met her. Someday I want to meet her. I know her a little bit through Anton Stroud, but Amber is, she's an author. She mm-hmm. is a movie producer. She is an actress. She sings beautifully. She's one of those people you would probably hate if she didn't appear to be so nice.
Right.
Someday I really do want to meet her.
It would be cool. I've got the first book, Death's Daughter.
How'd you like it?
I liked it. I was taken aback. I was like, wow, she can write.
Well, as a movie producer too. I mean, yeah. I just now got to J.A. Pitz's Black Blade Blues. He is a local author to me. Mm-hmm. He writes urban fantasy, actually set where I live. And it's taken me a year to get to the book, but it was wonderful. And I'm reading the second one, Honeyed Words, right now. So it's like, eventually there's a trickle down effect. I mean, yes, there's always books on top. But and certain authors I will always read first, sure. Sean McGuire and Stephen King, Neil Gaiman, those, you know, the favorites.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, I had to stop everything and read Ghost Story from Jim Butcher when it came out.
You know, I got to book four and I don't know why I stopped reading. I think because I moved. I have the first eight books, but it's one of those series that I've just kind of decided that at some point I'm going to be like, all right, I need to read this again and start from the beginning and read all the way through. And then I will catch up with the rest of the world.
Well, I won't give any spoilers, but there is a he released also a book of short stories called Side Jobs.
I actually have that, I think, on Kindle, but I haven't read it yet.
So he released Changes, and then Side Jobs, and then Ghost Story. And inside of Side Jobs is something that I've been waiting for all the books. It's a short story told from Karen Murphy's
point of view.
Yeah, and that was great for me. That made me sit there and go, oh, Jim, come on. Write us a novel. Write us a Karen Murphy novel.
Well, you know, my authors actually write short stories in their novel universes.
Hmm.
It's for two reasons. One, to get to know the character better.
Mm-hmm.
And two, to get some of that backstory out.
Sure.
It's like whenever I ask Shauna McGuire to write me a story for an anthology, if I can, I ask her to put it in the October Day series, which if you haven't read, I highly, highly recommend. So she's got one coming soon, hopefully, that I actually can't talk about. Never mind.
See what happens is I get you talking and then you just start telling me stuff. This is how I get like exclusive stuff out of people like Brent Weeks.
Well, maybe next time.
So now we've talked a lot about your anthologies, your editing and stuff. Now you do have a new novella coming out, correct?
I do. I am writing, or actually I'm in edits for Dark Quest Books. Is working with Savage Mojo. They're actually doing the fiction side of a new role-playing game called Shadeside. So Savage Mojo, who I actually worked for on Shanghai Vampocalypse and won an award there, will be putting out Shadeside. Dark Quest Books will be putting out the fiction for Shadeside. It's called The Lady of Seeking in the City of Waiting. Now, The City of Waiting is another name for Shadeside. It is the kind of city where any character from any genre can show up at any time. Except if it's high technology, their tech doesn't work. So think kind of a little bit like Thieves' World. That's how they want to do the fiction. Originally, the novella was going to be the anchor to the first anthology. And then I pitched it to them, and then they said, okay, we're going to do a novella that's a standalone, and you're going to be the flagship. You're going to introduce this role-playing game to non-gamers and gamers alike. So it had to work without being gamers and had to add something for the gamers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
When's that coming out?
I believe it is... Well, it was supposed to come out in December. I think it got delayed to January. I don't know for sure.
And when is the fifth anthology coming out?
Oh, the fifth anthology, Human for a Day by Daw, comes out December 6th.
Okay.
Actually, right before my birthday. It's like great birthday present.
It is.
And I'm in a Daw anthology that comes out December 6th. And that one's called Under the Veil and Other Tales of Valdemar.
Okay. And you have just a short story, or is it novella length in there? Or?
It's a short story. So I grew up reading Mercedes Lackey and reading the Valdemar universe. The fact that I'm actually writing something that's now canon has the young, you know, teenager in me just squealing like like mad, and high-pitched squeaks, you know, confetti. Sure. It's like two wonderful birthday presents for me, Mass Market and Valdemar. I just can't wait. I actually got to write a story about the bards. So I'm very, very pleased.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
You know, it's always nice to have like those teenage dreams come true.
I will have to admit this. I did not grow up wanting to be a writer.
Oh, really?
I grew up military, so I expected to have a military career.
Mm-hmm.
And then that got cut short due to medical issues. And so I spent 15 years breaking software. I mean, everything from video games to implantable defibrillators to Microsoft stuff. I have tested all kinds of things. And then I was able to work it so that I could work, be a full-time freelancer for a year. And that was 5 years ago.
See, I've been breaking software as a hobby all my life.
Well, I got paid for it.
I was hired in high school. My uncle hired me because I could type. And he needed someone who could type. And I impressed him over, he did an inventory over the weekend and he brought me in cause he said, your aunt says you can type. And so we're going to have you help us do this inventory. And we finished the inventory in record time because I was just like, they would give me these huge stacks of paper with the inventory numbers on them. And I just go through and, and I just type them all in and I got it all done really fast. And so he ended up hiring me.
Nice.
And I would come in after school and I would sit down and I would be doing price changes on stuff. He would set these huge thick books in front of me and with this like size 6 font. And I would have to go through, column after column after column and enter in these numbers. And I remember because it was like F1 to next and then you hit enter and there was like a certain amount of keystrokes and I could count the keystrokes and I knew exactly how many enters to hit and then put the numbers in and then hit F1 to go to the next one. And so I was really fast at that too. And one day I was sitting there and I hit I miskeyed something. And what I didn't realize, I was on a Unix system.
Oh.
And when I miskeyed something, it was a code that let me into the root of it.
Oh,
and
no.
I was in a complete and total edit mode.
Oh my God.
And I was in it. Yes, and I was in edit mode for about an hour and a half before the system administrator figured out that something horribly, horribly wrong was going on. Because I just continued, pressing keys and entering numbers. And
you weren't really looking at the screen at all? Or?
Oh, the screen looked fine. I didn't realize there was no indication that I was in an edit mode.
Oh, my
God. Except for a little dot in the corner. That I just didn't realize. And he came running and like had to roll back to a saved version or something. And then another time I was sitting there and for whatever reason, I hit the plus sign a bunch of times. I just like plus, 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 plus. Like I was bored and I just hit plus, plus, plus. And when I did that, I entered another edit mode and ended up breaking like the inventory module for this software.
Oh,
and he's like, how do you keep doing this?
You do what a tester does, which is what happens if I do this? Or you just don't pay attention.
They thought no one in their right mind would ever hit the plus sign like 9 times in a row. And apparently I did. But
are you kidding? People who are really frustrated will do that.
Yeah. Well, you sit there and you click, 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 until you're done. And so ever since then, people that I know who are software developers will actually say, hey, I just wrote something. Will you play with it and see what comes up? And I break stuff all the time. I find all the, anyway.
No, it can be fun. The converse of that is if I break something on my home machine, I can't really fix it. I suppose if I really tried hard, I could. But I'm married to a software engineer. So
I'm sorry.
Sorry for
I know a lot of software.
My husband
engineers.
At Microsoft at a D&D game. I love my geek. He is awesome.
I'm just teasing you. My a lot of my friends and family are actually in the software industry. I know a lot of people in the video game industry too who are software developers. And it's a very taxing job to have.
It can be, yes. I will tell you, video game programmers have it worse than mainstream programmers. Having worked in the video game industry and worked some really stupidly long hours because I was young and immortal, I loved it. Mm-hmm. But that was because I was young and immortal. I'm not so young anymore. And I kind of like this whole freelancing thing. I mean, choosing which 70 hours of the week I work is awesome because that means I can sleep until 9, even if I don't go to bed until, you know, late.
Yep.
Or early, depending on.
I completely understand. So, I feel like we could sit here and we could just chat forever. But unfortunately I am constrained by time and I have to let you go. So before I do that, why don't you tell folks, what your website is, where they can find you online. If you have a Twitter and a Facebook or a Google Plus or any of that kind of stuff that you want to share, where they can find you, and then, remind them again when, Anthology Number 5 comes out and when your novella is coming out.
Okay. My website is nice and easy. It's, jenniferbrozek.com. All of my social networking is all under jenniferbrozek.com or jenniferbrozek.com. Wow, that did not come out right. All of my social networking is under Jennifer Brozek. My Twitter is Jennifer Brozek. My Facebook is Jennifer Brozek, and there is a Jennifer Brozek fan page. I did Jennifer Brozek on Google Plus, and somebody made a wiki page for me, which was also kind of weird and cool. I've got a wiki page.
That's awesome.
I have a live journal, where I talk much more about the pro side of life. You know, what I'm working on. If I have a semi-open call, which I do, you know, occasionally do on Twitter, I'll be like, all right, I have five invitations for this anthology. If you have sold one story and gotten money from it, in which you have bought yourself a latte or paid a bill, you qualify. You know, and you know, of course, I make sure that they have actually sold something. But you know, that's how I find new talent. Publications coming out. I actually have several. Tales of the Talisman. I have a Weird West story coming out.
Okay.
Called the Man, the Priest, the Gun. I have. From Dark Quest Books, the Shadeside novella, I believe is in December or January. I can't remember quite how they did the schedule. It's called The Lady of Seeking and the City of Waiting. And then in December, December 6th is my big day. I have Human for a Day, an edited anthology, which has some wonderful people like Tanith Lee and Anton Stroud, Jay Lake, Shauna McGuire. And I'm in an anthology called Under the Veil, Other Tales of Valdemar, edited by Mercedes Lackey. I think I hit everything. Did I miss anything?
I don't think so. Any conventions you're going to be at? Any like book signings or anything like that where fans can connect with you?
I actually have no more this year because I just spent all the time in August. The next convention I will be at is in February. It's called DungeonCon, biggest gaming convention on the West Coast.
I find that difficult to believe with a name like DungeonCon.
DungeonCon? DungeonCon? Just look it up.
Okay.
It's the DUNDRACON, DungeonCon. I will be at Origins next year as one of the panelists. And I will be at WorldCon next year.
Okay. Well, very cool.
Also, I do have a Google group that is notification only that gets one email every month that basically tells you what's come out, what's coming out, what I've edited, and where I'll be.
And that is linked from your website, I believe.
It is. I have all this stuff is linked from jenniferbrozek.com. Nice and easy.
B-R-O-Z-E-K.
But that's it. And I've really enjoyed this, Patrick. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks again to Jennifer for coming on. That was a lot of fun. Usual stuff. Visit sfsignal.com each and every day for all your speculative news needs. John D. is the resident blogger and editor over there, and all of our irregulars contribute articles each and every day. So there's always something up there, from tidbits to reviews to things on movies, you name it, it's on there each and every day, sfsignal.com. Follow John D on Twitter, twitter.com/sfsignal for tweets that lead you back to sfsignal.com and other sites. He tweets a lot of things from a lot of different people, so follow him on Twitter, and you'll never be without science fiction news. If you're looking for me online, that's easy. I'm all things from my brain, ATFMB, twitter.com/ATFMB, ATFMB.com, and facebook.com/ATFMB. You can see the pattern. I also blog occasionally over at sfsignal.com, and of course, we have this podcast twice a week. If you enjoy this podcast or any of our podcasts, there's a few things you can do to help us out. Number one, you can go to iTunes and subscribe. That does help us because it boosts our ranking inside of iTunes and helps, you know, get us up a little bit higher when people are doing searches. Same thing if you give us a couple stars or write us a review. These things all help us inside of iTunes. Outside of iTunes, just tell your friends. Tell them to go to sfsignal.com, check out the podcast, and that will help us as well. That's it for me. I am out of here. Tune in every Monday for another panel and every Thursday for another interview. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye.